pull up a chair. I want you to do something for me. Next time you look at your airplane ticket, your ramp pass, your ATIS clearance into this place, look at the name of the field. It doesn't say Oshkosh Municipal, it says Whitman, Whitman Regional Airport. And I'd bet you a tank of Avgas that 99 out of 100 folks walking these grounds this week have never once stopped to ask who Whitman was. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Taildragger, and this is The Hangar. And today, standing here at the busiest airport on the planet during the biggest week of the year, I want to tell you about the man whose name is painted right on the field underneath all of us. Because he earned it. Lord, did he earn it. Now, before I get rolling, let me tell you today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo private pilot instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. And I gotta tell you that the fellow we're talking about today earned about every coin you could mint. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's get into it. His name was Sylvester Joseph Whitman. But nobody on God's green earth called him Sylvester. They called him Steve. He was born in 1904 down in Byron, Wisconsin, back when the airplane itself was barely older than a toddler. The Wright brothers had flown at Kitty Hawk just a few months before this boy came into the world. Think about that. He was born into the very first generation of human beings who could look up and see a flying machine and think, someday, that'll be me. And here's the thing that'll get you. Steve Whitman was legally blind in one eye, poor vision his whole life. The kind of eyesight that today would have a fella grounded before he ever touched a stick. But this was back when Avgas was cheap and airspace was free, and a determined young man could teach himself to fly and nobody was going to stop him. So that's exactly what he did. Now here's where it gets interesting. Whitman didn't just want to fly, he wanted to fly fast. And in the 1920s and 30s, if you wanted to fly fast, you went air racing. This was the golden age. The national air races out in Cleveland. Pylon racing wingtip to wingtip, down low where the crowd could smell the castor oil and the exhaust. Men were getting killed doing it. And the airplanes that won were the airplanes somebody built in a shed with their own two hands and their own wild ideas. Steve Whitman was one of those men in the shed. He built himself a little racer and he called it Chief Oshkosh. Named it right after the town. After the Menominee leader the town was named for. This was a tiny thing. A midget of an airplane. Low wing. A little engine up front working its heart out. And Whitman would climb into that machine with his one good eye and go tearing around the pylons against airplanes with twice the horsepower and twice the money behind them. And he beat them. That's the part I want you to sit with. Picture the scene. Cleveland, late summer. The grandstands packed, ladies in their hats, men in their shirt sleeves, the smell of hot oil and cut grass and hot dogs. The public address announcer crackling over the field. And out on the course, low and mean and screaming, this little home built out of Wisconsin, flown by a half-blind kid nobody had ever heard of, cutting the pylon so tight the wingtips practically dragging in the dirt. The big-name pilots hated racing him, because you couldn't outmoney Steve Whitman. He'd take a small engine and make it faster than your big one through sheer cleverness. He understood drag and streamlining down in his bones at a time when a lot of that was still guesswork. He'd shave and file and cowl and fare everything until his airplane slipped through the air like it resented every molecule. He built a whole string of them over the years. There was Chief Oshkosh. There was a little one called Buster, and I mean little. One of the smallest racing airplanes ever to be competitive. A midget racer that is hanging in the Smithsonian to this very day. And there was a big brute called Bonzo that ran with the fastest closed-course airplanes in the country against the military ships and the money teams. The man won races for decades, and I don't mean he won a few and hung it up. I mean this fellow was still air racing, still cutting pylons in competition, into his 70s and 80s. Let me say that again so it lands. In his 80s. When most of us are arguing with the flight surgeon about our blood pressure, Steve Whitman was still strapping into a racer and going flat out around a course. Now here's something you use every single time you fly, and you probably don't know you have Steve Whitman to thank for it. You ever look at the main landing gear on a Cessna? One of those little tricycle gear singles, a Cessna 150, a Cessna 172, 182? Look at the main gear legs. They're not struts with oil and springs and all that plumbing. They're just a tapered rod of spring steel, one clean curved leg, flexing to soak up the landing. That was Whitman's idea. He worked out that a simple tapered spring steel gear leg could take the beating of landing after landing, flex and rebound, no complicated oleo strut needed. Simple, light, cheap, reliable. Cessna looked at what he'd done and put a version of it under thousands upon thousands of airplanes. To this day, when a student pilot greases one on, or when a student pilot does not grease one on and that gear leg flexes and saves the day, that's Steve Whitman's engineering absorbing the blow. That's a pioneer, Not a fellow who did one famous thing once. A fellow whose fingerprints are still on the airplanes rolling out the hangar door this morning. And I told you we'd get to the field itself. Here's how his name ended up under all of us. Way back in 1931, in the teeth of the Depression, the city of Oshkosh needed somebody to run their little airport, and they hired Steve Whitman to manage it. And he ran that field, this field, for the better part of 40 years. He was the airport. He fixed the airplanes. He taught people to fly. He ran the operation, and in between all of it, he kept building racers and kept winning. He managed this field until around 1969, and when he finally stepped back, the community did the only right thing. They named the airport after him, Whitman Field. Whitman Regional Airport, the name you flew into this week. Now here's the piece that ties the whole bow on it. Around 1970, the Experimental Aircraft Association, the EAA, went looking for a new home for their annual fly-in. They'd been down in Rockford, Illinois, and they'd outgrown it. They needed room, and they found their way north to this field in Oshkosh. This field with the long runways and the wide grass and the name of an old air racer painted on it. Think about the poetry of that for a second. The home-built movement, the whole EAA, is about the fella in the shed building his own flying machine with his own hands and his own ideas. And they brought that gathering, the biggest gathering of airplanes on Earth, home to a field named for the original fella in the shed. Steve Whitman was home-building and outthinking the factory teams 30 and 40 years before there was an EAA to celebrate it. So when you're camped under your wing out in the North 40 tonight, or when you're standing on the flight line watching the warbirds taxi by, you're standing on Steve Whitman's field. The man was still around in the early years of the Oshkosh fly-ins. Still a fixture, still flying. The home builders who filled these grounds were his people. He was one of them before the word existed. Now I'll be honest with you, because this is a hangar, and we tell the truth in a hangar, even the hard parts. Steve Whitman flew right up to the end. In 1995, well into his 90s, he and his wife Paula were flying one of his own designs down south when the airplane came apart in the air. They believe it was a structural failure in the wing covering, and that was the end of Steve and Paula Whitman. It's a hard way to lose a legend. But I'll tell you how I choose to see it, and I think old Steve would back me up. The man flew for more than 70 years. He was born just after the Wright brothers, and he flew into the age of glass panels and jet airliners. He never quit. He never hung it up and sat in the rocking chair. He was doing the thing he loved, in an airplane he built with his own hands, right to the very last. There are worse ways for a pilot to finish the flight, a whole lot worse, and his airplanes outlived him. That little racer buster hangs in the Smithsonian, his tailwind design, a fast, efficient little home built. Folks are still building them and flying them today. You'll find them parked right out here on the home built rows this week if you go looking, 60, 70 years on, and Steve Whitman's ideas are still leaving the ground. So here's what I want you to do before you leave Oshkosh this year. Sometime this week, when the crowd thins out a little, maybe early morning with the dew still on the grass and the first radials just starting to cough and catch, I want you to stop. Look down that long runway and say the name to yourself, Whitman. A half-blind kid from Byron, Wisconsin, who taught himself to fly, who outthought the money and the muscle with a little airplane built in a shed, who put the landing gear under half the trainers in America, and who ran this very field for 40 years until they finally painted his name on it for good. That's whose field you're on. That's the ground this whole show lands on. My thanks this week to the folks at the EAA and the good history kept alive over at the EAA Aviation Museum, and to the Smithsonian for keeping little Buster hanging where the whole world can see him. If you want to read more of Steve Whitman's story, and you should, you can find plenty of it linked over at radiohangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. Go find a spring steel gear leg this week and give it a pat for old Steve. And keep the greasy side down.